This is F1 Debrief episode 98, Pretending Not to Pretend to Sandbag. Coming up on today's special debrief, we catch up with GrandPrix.com's Joe Saywood in Melbourne.
On the line, we have with us a very special guest, Joe Saywood from GrandPrix.com, who joined us very recently for a podcast.
He's come back for more.
Yeah, we didn't scare him off. Hello, Joe.
Hello, good morning. Oh, no, it's not good morning there, is it? It's the other way up. Good evening.
But it is good morning for you because you're in Melbourne at the moment.
I am indeed, yes. 7:03 in the morning, and a delightful time of day it is too.
The last time we spoke to you, you were getting ready. You were packing up and getting organised. How was the trip down there, and did you forget anything?
Oh, don't.
What happened?
Did I forget anything? Well, yeah, I did. I was on an aeroplane in Dubai and managed to leave my mobile phone in the pocket, so that's flying around the Middle East somewhere at the moment.
Oh, my goodness, the iPhone.
Yeah, it's all part of the fun, you know. It'll probably turn up in someone else's pocket eventually.
Sound like a man who's done this before.
Oh, I have a sort of saying that I've done everything you can do wrong in travelling, but I keep finding new things to do. You know, I've actually achieved ridiculously wonderful things, like left my entire suitcase behind and things like that. You know, I mean, you ask how on earth can you do that, but I've done it.
You made it this time. You made it down the Yellow Brick Road. You're in Melbourne. Yeah. Have you caught up with everybody?
Yes, pretty much. It was quite interesting this year. There was one thing that I noticed straight away, and that was when you walk in the paddock at the first race, normally you see people who are wearing the wrong coloured shirts because your brain has got used to seeing their faces in the normal sort of shirt colour, and then suddenly they're changed. And it's very interesting. It was much less this year because very few changes have been going on, funnily enough. People are holding on to their jobs and hoping for the best. So that was the one thing that struck me so far. But, you know, it's nice I bumped into Paul Stoddart, and you only see him about once a year. And, you know, it's just a normal sort of... It's really like, you know, starting school again each year, you know. I can just about remember that far back.
Did you get up to any PR shenanigans yesterday?
Well, we had all this daft business with the diffusers yesterday, which was a sort of necessary step, you know.
It was expected.
It was entirely expected because the big teams, they don't like getting beaten by these nasty little uppity small teams. And because they're obviously not as clever as the small teams, they hadn't done the same thing, and therefore their best course of action was to complain loudly about it and say it's not fair, which actually means we're just not clever enough to have done it. And... So we had to go through the process of some man from Iceland, another bloke from the Czech Republic, and a bloke from Tasmania had to decide that this was legal or not. I have no idea what qualifications they have to
this
do.
This is the steward you're talking about now.
It is, yes, the FIA stewards. It's an odd world in which we live, but it's like, you know, you have to imagine these sort of old blokes running around the field with black shirts on, blowing whistles. You know, they're supposed to be referees, but their decisions are based on goodness knows what, and I'm sure that they will be they'll all end up in the International Court of Appeal in Paris in a while, and we'll go through the whole process again. But basically at 12:30, just after midnight last night, after 6 hours of sitting around looking at pictures, they decided that all three of the diffusers are fine, and so they'll go and race with those this weekend, and I have a vague suspicion that the people will only see the back of the bronze, and they'll probably win by about a lap. The one to watch out for, I think, is McLaren, because I think they snuck in a quick diffuser at the last minute when everyone else was looking the other way. I think the McLaren went through scrutineering with a fancy diffuser on which nobody has seen yet, but we'll have to see if that's actually the case, because it was a bit of a busy day.
Both McLaren and Force India abstained from protesting. It was only BMW.
I think Force India was too busy just sort of being a small team in chaos. I think that McLaren were very much sitting on the fence. BMW messed up by getting their protest wrong, or I don't know, they delivered the wrong currency or filled in the wrong form, you know. Something went wrong and they threw that one out. So basically you have the sort of Ferrari, Renault, and whoever the other one was. My brain is completely vacant at the moment.
Ferrari, Renault, and Red Bull. Yeah, sorry, and BMW were thrown out.
Great. That's right, Red Bull, that's it. Yeah, well, Toro Rosso didn't do it because they don't have to do anything because Red Bull does it all for them. You know, know, that's the sort of the lineup, if you like, in the boxing match. And they had to have the referee sort of stepping in between them. But they're trying to do it. It's quite funny because, of course, they're trying to pretend to be FOTA and all very united and life is wonderful. But you stop and think about it. It's the chairman of FOTA is actually protesting the vice chairman of FOTA because you've got Ferrari and Toyota on either sides of the fence. So it's kind of a funny thing from a political point of view. There are people out there who wish to promote disunity for various sundry reasons, largely to do with power and money. It's quite funny to watch the sort of political games in the background. I mean, we were sort of taking guesses yesterday as to, you know, what's going to happen when they make their decision, and you look at it and you say, right, well, is this diffuser going to be good for Formula One? Answer, yes, because someone unexpected is going to win and it'll create lots of excitement. That's one good thing. Secondly, it's actually right, the decision, because just because the small teams are cleverer, or I say Toyota's not a small team, is it really, but just because they're more clever than the other people, they should be rewarded. And, you know, the fact that the big manufacturers are whinging and whining is really neither here nor there, because fundamentally Formula One's about ingenuity and cleverness, and they weren't clever enough.
You were talking, or you mentioned on GrandPrix.com that it was Super Aguri that first initiated this new fuser design. Can you give us more background on how that story developed and how it is that Braun GP have this Uber diffuser and then Toyota have a similar system and then Williams have something along the same lines?
As I understand it, it was Super Aguri that came up with the idea. It's all to do with CAD-CAM and a line that goes between two points. And on any CAD-CAM machine, when you get into all these tangents and things, it gets really hard to explain. But this is why nobody's really explained it properly, because we don't really understand. But, you know, without being able to draw it and sort of sit there and point, it's quite hard to do. But basically, if you have two points and a curve between them, there are two possible curves. And I think Super Aguri discovered this and found out, probably by accident, I should think, the other one worked better than expected, and that worked better than the inverse one, which everyone else was doing. And as a result of that, they had this on the car last year. And when they went to the wall, a lot of the Super Aguri engineers were just absorbed into Honda, because at the time Honda was dealing with that pig of a car they had, and they wanted their own engineers to try and fix that. So they put the Super Aguri people on designing this year's car. And so that was back in, you know, almost a year ago. Sort of Spanish Grand Prix time, I guess it would have been. So they went to work, and a few of the Super Aguri people disappeared off, and I understand that one of them went to Toyota, which is how they got the idea. And it seems that Williams actually came up with it independently of everyone by having sort of clever people sitting there going, well, hang on a minute, if we do that, you know, we'll get this and that. But all three systems are different, which is why there were three different protests going on yesterday, and three different hearings, which I presume is why it took them such a very long time to come to a conclusion. But, you know, it was a necessary evil. It just rather spoiled the dining arrangements last night, that was all.
I read on your blog that you bunked off waiting around for the decision and went and had dinner.
Everybody did. I mean, we've done it before so many times. You know, I think specifically of Monaco a couple of years ago, it was just hideous. We were still there at midnight, you know, after a qualifying. I think it was that ridiculous parking job that Schumacher did, if I remember correctly. You know, where he sort of parked the car to stop anyone else beating him.
I vaguely remember that, yeah.
Vaguely, sort of. And there was another one we had in Brazil, I think it might have been last year when the championship was settled, actually. It's all about sport and these referee chaps. You know, in Formula One, they don't blow the whistle and there's a decision made and they go sort of running off to the dressing room. You know, they've got to sit down there and eat oranges and look at videos and chat with Charlie Whiting and then think about it an awful lot. And so everyone else is sort of sitting around drumming their fingers going, come on, because actually we're going to die of starvation if you don't tell us what's going on. From bitter experience, we've decided that, you know, it's probably best to go and feed yourself first and then go back and see what's happening. And the poor guys from the news agencies, they're the ones who take the brunt of it, because they just have to sit there because they have to be, you know, filing it as soon as it hits the street. So,
and what was the vibe whilst this was going on? I mean, what do the everyone else in the press room think of all this? Because there's an argument to say it could have and should have. There should be a process in which this can be sorted out before we get to a race, because now it's effectively, there's a little bit overshadowing the racing. And it's nice to have it going on in the background.
It is today, but tomorrow it'll all be forgotten. I think the thing is that the FIA attitude to it is that the teams come along and ask an opinion. They say, is this acceptable? And technical delegate, whoever it is, Usually it's Charlie Whiting, who's not the technical delegate, but has the technical background to do the job. He says, yes, I think that's fine. Now, logically, you'd say, well, you know, he's the policeman. He's allowed to, you know, if he says this is the law, this is the law. But the bottom line is that any policeman can be challenged if you go and see the magistrates, you know. So his opinion isn't actually the law if somebody wishes to challenge it. So this was a necessary step, and it sometimes happens with new regulations. You know, people say, well, you know, what is allowed and what isn't allowed? It's only an issue because it's all been done in the public eye. But then again, that's the way it is. You can't really do it any other way. So we just have to go through that and then get on with the racing. And believe me, there'll be diffusers, new ones popping up left, right, and center. The people who are in trouble are the ones who didn't design any options into it.
Yeah.
And I think probably the ones in the most trouble are Red Bull, because they have a suspension that is not easily modifiable. I think we'll see pretty fast reactions from I think McLaren may be the smartest of the lot. I think they've been developing this already, and I think I'm pretty sure, but I'm not 100% sure, but I think they got in on the car even before scrutineering, just to sort of be on the fence halfway, which is, I think, why they didn't get involved at all in any of the protesting, because I think that they were sort of going both ways at the same time.
That's diffusers. That was yesterday's controversy. What are you expecting, and what are you expecting to walk into the when you get to the paddock today?
Well, I hope to walk in and see a bit of motor racing. That would be good. I think that's what we're going to see. I think the rubbish fashion is, you know, that we've done that bit. Now, the other big rumour of the night, and it's on the Times in London. You know, somebody's tipped them the wink that Virgin is going to be sponsoring Braun, and that Richard Branson's on an aeroplane coming here to announce it all. I don't know if that's true or not, but generally speaking, the Times is a celebrated place for people to leak things. And the guy is quite happy. You know, he's like a wicketkeeper, really. You know, people throw things at him and he catches them and puts them on there and looks good. So I think if he's gone with it and said that Richard Branson's on a plane coming to announce a Virgin deal, that may be today's news. And if that is the case, well, it's a very clever thing for Richard Branson to have done. Because, you know, there's a big white Braun wandering around, and if it's going to win the race and be on TV a lot, it's a very good deal, you know.
We're planning to watch Free Practice on the BBC because they're providing coverage this year. Where do you normally watch your Friday action? Do you get down to go trackside?
They're putting the Free Practice on the telly?
Red Button, we believe. Is that right?
Red Button online and on the radio.
Full coverage.
Blimey. Well, I hope it's going to be very exciting coverage. I think it might be a bit, you know, it's just like watching a test session, really. So
we're not expecting much action, are we?
There's going to be a lot of engine saving going on with the restrictions. Is it eight engines per season, including Fridays, I believe? So therefore, we're not expecting a huge amount of cars going around.
I think we will see a lot because of the testing ban that's come in means that the only time they now have to test is going to be Fridays. So I think you will see cars going whizzing around. I'm sure the key point will to be avoid smacking into things. And so I think we'll see the normal sort of work going on. I don't know if people will be going for times in any vast way, but I think, you know, this is the first sort of time. Well, it's not the first time they've all run together, but it's the first time they've all run together when they're about to race. So I don't know if we'll see any valid action or valid timings today. I think we may have to wait until tomorrow for that. But, you know, it's just good to see the cars running and hear the noise. You know, it's always good at the end of the start of a new season to hear the noise going on. It sort of gets the heart going and stuff like that, you know. So I think today will just be sort of getting into, you know, the theme of things and you know, the gossip. There's a sort of pattern to Formula One gossip and rumours. You know, the first few races, it's all very exciting and optimistic. And after, you know, we get to sort of Bahrain, it's who's going to be fired because their car's absolute shite. You know, that'll be the next stage in the rumour mongering. And then we'll get round to the drivers who are unhappy. And, you know, Kimi Raikkonen will be trolling around in 11th place or something. And then we'll have the Alonso rumours. And I'm sure, as Felipe Massa pointed out yesterday, he said, you know, Lewis Hamilton's coming to Ferrari now. He said, I think my dad will probably be driving me with me next year because there are so many rumors. You know, that's just how it is. It's the nature of the beast.
So what does the rest of the weekend hold in store for you now then? So you after Free Practice, what does someone like you do on a Friday night in Melbourne?
Tonight is it's very rare actually. It doesn't happen a lot, but for reasons that completely escape me, every year I get invited to the ball here. And, you know, it's not something, because it doesn't happen at every race, I actually go. And I have a lovely time on Fridays at in Melbourne. It means, yeah, I might be a little bit behind on the work, but you get to wear the penguin suit and hang out with all the ladies in the skimpy frocks and stuff, and it's all jolly nice, really. And I get to, because I get invited by the chairman of the Grand Prix. I don't know. I used to work on a magazine out here for a long time, 20 years. So I think he got to used to me writing things, and I've always been a big fan of Melbourne, so I think he likes what I write, so he always invites me, which is very sweet of him. And I get to sit next to important and nice people like the head of News Corp and the man running the Korean Grand Prix, so it's usually quite a good news story too, you know. It'd be a good blog item for my blog, you know, who did I sit next to, and you know, what excitements were there. So that'll be quite interesting. It's also going to be quite interesting because the ball actually starts 90 minutes after the last session ends. So we have to, those of us who are going to go to the ball tonight, have to do real sort of Cinderella running around, jumping in cupboards and coming out, or telephone boxes, coming out wearing the right gear, you know. So, and I'll probably have a couple of drinks, I should think. It's not too serious until tomorrow. And then we'll get into it a bit more seriously. And after that, I just won't sleep much because I'm doing all the various things that I do, including the e-magazine, which is, you know, keeps me busy.
Wait, what stage are you at the moment on that? Are you working on that today, or does that sort of begin in tomorrow?
Well, there's 60. Well, there's actually an totally unlimited number of blank pages at the moment because I haven't done a single thing.
Wow.
Well, you know, it's not that difficult. Well, it is. It's. I don't know.
That seems like an astonishing amount of work to be doing.
It gets done, that's all. The hardest bit is writing it, funnily enough. You know, laying it all out and lobbing pictures in and attention to detail and all that sort of lark isn't too bad. It's just, it's the thought processes more than anything else. But, yeah, it should be all right. We'll see what happens. I have to think up. Now, the other thing is thinking up what articles to run, you know, so I haven't actually decided what I'm going to write about yet, but I'm sure I'll find something in the course of the day.
We also read on your blog that you're starting writing for the Paddock magazine, and we actually get that one, don't we?
Well, you already subscribe.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm glad to hear it. I hope everyone else will, because, you know, it always helps so you get some money to pay for things. But, it was... I really don't know very much about it because when they first started out, they asked me to do stuff and then they forgot completely that they'd asked me and sort of disappeared off their own path. And then I don't know what happened, but they came back a few days ago and said, you know, we're putting in a new bunch of people. And it's actually the same basic sort of crew or sort of half of it, actually, who used to be on Formula One magazine, Bernie Ecclestone's one. This is another version of it. And so... we'll see how it goes.
Do you know how it's different from your GP Plus magazine? Will you be writing different things?
Oh, completely, yeah. No, I mean, GP Plus is very much a sort of... It's very much pretty pictures and nice words. It doesn't get into too much heavy, businessy kind of stuff. And the paddock's view is very much a businessy style magazine with all the sort of, you know, the politics and the money and interviewing the people behind it, as opposed to... you know, drivers and race reports and stuff. I'm sure it'll still be in there, but it's just a slightly different emphasis. And I think that there is room in the market very definitely for a good magazine that is it takes Formula One seriously but doesn't take itself too seriously, you know. And I think they're different animals completely. It's like all these things, you know, the market has a lot of different segments to it. You have, you know, Motorsport magazine, for example, which I've also just done something for, which has a slightly, you know, different focus and a different audience.
We've yet to convince Christine to read that one. You're not a fan. You struggle with that one, don't you?
Is that the one with all the history?
Yeah. it's more history, isn't it, Motorsport magazine?
Well, it was. I mean, I think, funnily enough, there's a fairly amusing story. A couple of years ago, David Tremaine and I, before we started Grand Prix Plus, we actually tried to go and acquire Motorsport magazine because we thought it was being totally wasted.
Goodness,
because it had been pushed down this line of history, and everyone, basically the readership was dying of old age. And you know, we remembered Motorsport for what it was originally, which was a modern magazine. You know, with Dennis Jenkinson, who was one of the great Formula One reporters of the 50s and 60s. And, you know, Jenks, when we were growing up, Jenks was the man, you know, he was out there doing it, riding his motorbike around Europe and you know, the sort of inspirational character.
Yeah.
With daft opinions. Yeah, yeah, pretty. Well, no, there was Jabby Cronbach too, the French, Swiss rather, he was. You know, but there were these people who were actually doing it and living the dream. And it was, you know, that was what it was about. And it drifted off into this becoming historical because it got bought by Haymarket Publishing, and they obviously didn't want to compete with themselves too much, and so they segmented everything neatly into different things, and motorsport was just quietly dying because, you know, the readership wasn't really increasing. And then we sort of looked at it and said, well, if we take it back to what it was, that would be a good idea. But obviously we couldn't tell them that, and so we actually weren't ever sort of officially in the bidding at all, because we were hiding behind somebody else, because if they heard that we were going to try and buy it, they'd probably figure out what we were doing. But, you know, a man with proper money came along and did it, and he's done a nice job with it. So, you know, I think they just used the same idea, but actually had the thought processes and the checkbook, which is, of course, the most important thing.
Absolutely. Are you in this month, or is it going to be in a forthcoming issue?
I went to interview Bernie last week in London. So I've done a 3,000 word interview with Bernie, which was good. Just he and I, no interruptions. And so we, you know, get the flow going and working in the right directions, as opposed to the modern interview now where you have sort of four or five journalists involved, because very few people give you one-to-ones anymore. It's quite nice to do the one-to-ones, but they're hard to get because, you know, if you want to interview Sebastian Vettel at the moment, so I'm told, like, I think I gave up and just said, I can't be bothered with this. But, you know, there's a sort of four-month lead time, you know.
Whoa.
And at the end of it, if you're lucky, you might get a group. You might conceivably get a one-to-one. But, you know, I think there's an element in all of this that they're not quite doing enough, really. And, you know, because you look in America, those guys are, the NASCAR boys are, they're constantly working. They're constantly seeing the fans, signing autographs, doing sponsor functions. You know, Formula One drivers in general do a little bit less than some of the others.
Wasn't it this time last year that basically no one was interested in talking to Vettel at all? And now he's suddenly had this turnaround. What's happened there?
He was just in the right car at the right time and did a decent job, you know. But if you compare when Vettel was with Tony Oliuzzi, at the end of 07, that would be after they fired Scott Speed. You know, Vettel did, you know, people think he's, you know, he is the new Messiah. And he's clearly very good. But I'm still to be absolutely 100% convinced that he's, you know, he is the next uber superstar. But, you know, he did a terrific job in Monza last year. Admittedly, it was helped that, you know, the opposition were rubbish that day. And I Kovalainen was driving around like a little old lady. I mean, it was shocking.
I think he thinks that as well, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, it really was, if you think about it. There's a Toro Rosso winning a race. Hello, this is Minardi. You know, I love Minardi, all the rest of it, but they never win races. That's what they're there for. You know? And it was just such a strange experience. It was lovely because, I mean, it's always nice when a new team wins. And when the ultimate underdog wins a race, you know, you get people weeping. And it's all the sort of human stuff about what it's all about, you know. That's why we watch it, because you get stories like that.
And we're definitely watching this weekend because of that.
It's always nice to have great stories. And, you know, this one is the Braun story is, you know, it's Lazarus, isn't it? You know, you've got this bonkers racing team that's hopeless and has been for years, and they decide, for reasons that are completely ridiculous now if you look back at it, to give it all away. And then suddenly, whoops, oh my God, they're winning. Can you imagine being a Honda executive right now, looking at what's going on in Melbourne, going, oh no, what have we done? It's worse than that, because not only have they pulled out and they're not going to get the publicity that they've paid for, they've given away for a pound assets worth $250 million or more, probably. In addition to that, they've paid the team, and basically, you know, they paid the team to buy the team off them. It's totally bizarre. And they paid them a huge amount of money as well, apparently. This is a rumour down here. You know, there's talk of one, they got £120 million out of Honda to take the thing off their hands. That's the numbers being kicked around down here.
And that was a potential race winner.
Not only is it a potential race winner, but the other thing, which is a sort of subtle thing that's happened in the last few days, is the number change that went on. Because they were 18 and 19, and they've gone to 20 and 21. And you might think, what's all that about? What that means is that Bernie Ecclestone can go and get a pile of money out of the Honda Motor Company for not honouring their commitments. And so they're going to have to pay it again. So all things considered, if you were a bloke at Honda, you'd have jumped on your sword by now. And in fact, the management has already changed at the top end of Honda. But it's a sort of combination of automobile company executive nightmares going on there. And in Formula One, of course, you know, there's not much respect for these things. If they've messed up, people are just going to laugh at them. It's sort of, what a bunch of idiots. How on earth do they manage to give away this gem of a car? There we go. We shall see. But, you know, there are other things in there, other great stories. You know, wouldn't it be great to see Williams suddenly pop up, because sure, they've got the diffuser too, you know, and they need a bit of a boost. And I'm not sure the car's necessarily good enough. And I'm still to be 100% convinced by at least one of the drivers, or both, actually, come to think of it, let's be honest. But Williams is, I was doing this thing the other day, and I was just looking at the way teams have developed, and there's only three teams that are all unchanged in the last, I guess it would be the last 20 years. Everybody else has been sold several times, but Ferrari, McLaren and Williams are the only ones who are, in fact, the same now. There have been a couple of new ones. You know, Sauber's almost the same, but it has been bought by BMW and is fundamentally different. You've had a few disappearing. And, you know, the only new one really is Toyota, who just have all the money in the world and can go on spending it until somebody goes, meh, can't do this anymore. We've really got to achieve something.
Just on that very quickly, because we're taking up way too much of your time already. But on the Toyota front, the third team with a diffuser, better than Williams or not as good as Williams?
No idea. I mean, that's the glorious thing about it at the moment. You walk around the paddock, say, who's going to win? They'll go, absolutely no idea. Probably the Braun if they let the diffusers happen. I mean, the only thing we can say with any certainty is that car is a rocket ship. Beyond that, we really don't have a clue who's fast and who's not, because nobody's actually seen, you know, with the gloves off and all the bits on the cars, we've actually not seen them all running together. Everyone's been sandbagging or pretending to sandbag or pretending not to pretend to sandbag. You know, all these silly games that they're playing with each other. And so we really are just sitting here waiting to see, you know, get them all out on the track and let's see what they can do. And even then, you know, you have to bear in mind that Melbourne is a bit of a strange event, because last year, you know, there was a Williams on the podium and there was a Toro Rosso up in the points, and all kinds of weird things were happening. And sometimes you don't really get the true picture of what's going on until, you know, sort of into Malaysia. So, you know, whatever it is, we're going to have a good story. We got the additional strange thing, and this is going to be a twilight race. And we're going to have, you know, they're going to be driving into the sunlight at the first corner, which could be quite entertaining. Luckily, Ralf Schumacher is not here to drive into somebody and go flying through the air across the top of the ball like he did a few years ago. There's all kinds of new elements and new excitements. But, you know, the place is bubbling away. It's quite nice. The weather's all right. Not too bad. Not too hot. Not too cold. Bit of rain, which actually down here is quite important. They've had I'm sure everybody knows about the bushfires that have been going on down here. That's a very big element of what's happening this weekend. I believe the driver's parade is going to be on fire trucks, and all the teams have been helping out and doing stuff. And Lewis Hamilton went to a hospital to see some of the people who were in the victims in that. And Sauber and Minardi's, would you believe, the Minardi two-seaters are here, still going after 10 years. And they were out at one of the towns that got burned down. And apparently it was a fantastic event and really emotional. Down here, it may not be big in, you know, it made the news internationally, but down here it was a major disaster. And so this is, you know, very much a key element this weekend of the whole thing is this sort of theme about of sort of getting over this disaster and you know, moving on, and Formula One is really helping out. I was talking to Ron Walker, the chairman of the Grand Prix here yesterday, and he said it's been absolutely fantastic how helpful the teams have been. So these are things you don't necessarily see in the frontline headlines, you know, where they, you know, we make fun of the teams and knock them a bit, but you know, when you ask them nicely and they can see the reason to do it, they are very good at it and very helpful.
Good stuff. Yes. Listen, Joe, we're going to let you go. We have to, because you must have loads to do. But we will be keeping an eye on your blog, joesayward.wordpress.com, your official website, grandprix.com. And we will be looking forward to our very first issue of Grand Prix Plus magazine.
Maybe we can speak next week because we're off to wherever we're going next week, going on from there. So I like doing this; it's fun, and it's nice to sort of get the feedback too. I had a lot of feedback from the last chat. It's nice because sometimes in this job, all you ever get is people saying, "Well, it's rubbish," you know, because people always like to criticize. But it's nice to have people sort of saying, "God, that was really great." And with the podcast, you can actually do that.
Okay, well, we will be here next week. We're not going anywhere, are we?
So. No, we'd love to talk to you again, but have a good weekend this weekend.
Enjoy the racing.
I shall do my very best, and hopefully, actually, I can look out the window and see if it's raining or something like that. What's happening today? Oh, it's all grey and horrible, but there you are. It doesn't look like there's any snow coming or anything like that. So hopefully it'll be a nice sunny weekend. So, yes, I will speak to you soon.
Thank you very much, Joe.